Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in Deuteronomy chapter 23. Verse 1 reads, "No one whose testicles are crushed or whose male organ is cut off shall enter the assembly of the Lord." Well, hello there. That's awkward. But the hits keep on coming. No pun intended. No one from illegitimate birth and no one from a forbidden union, including the Ammonites or the Moabites, were allowed, this chapter tells us, to enter the assembly of the Lord. But what exactly was the assembly of the Lord? Did it mean the community? Were you exiled from the country, or was it religious worship? Well, nobody really knows today, but our best guess is that the assembly of the Lord is referring to the army. In fact, whenever there was a war to be fought, Joshua or the king or whoever it was would give the command to assemble the fighting men or the army. It was like saying, "Avengers, assemble." So the assembly of the Lord is the army. This is thought because the next part has to do with warfare, and it's continuing from the previous conversation about warfare and armies. This chapter has to do with cleanliness within the camp of soldiers and also forbids ritual prostitution, which would become a particular temptation when the men were assembled together for war, and when they were a very long way from home and or their wives. When the army was traveling through the land, the temptation to take in ritual prostitutes would be huge, and Moses here says, don't even think about it, guys. So although it's completely unknown, there's good evidence that the assembly of the Lord here is actually the army. Let's get into the particulars in verses 3 through 6. The Ammonites and Moabites are excluded from being able to serve in the armies of Israel. And in this case, even to the 10th generation. That means the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandsons are unable to serve in the military if they're descended from the Ammonites or the Moabites. But in verses 7 through 8, the Edomites and Egyptian descendants to the 3rd generation are cool. In each case, there's justification for this decision where Moses gives the history of these nations, particularly their interaction with Israel. There was some bad blood, and it had to do with idolatry. So while Moses doesn't fault the Egyptians for being Egyptians and worshiping Egyptian gods, he does fault the Ammonites and Moabites for trying to corrupt the Israelites and get them to become pagans, particularly under the leadership of Balak, under the influence of Balaam. A particularly dark and shameful chapter from Israel's history, where they were turned overnight to worship pagan gods, being lured in by sex. In verses 9 through 14, we read, "When you are encamped against your enemies, then you shall keep yourself from every evil thing. If any man among you becomes unclean," I'm not reading that part. You're on your own. Needless to say, there's some sticky stuff here in this chapter, and it's best you go it alone here. I just want to pause a minute and thank Chris Langham Through the Word for giving me the book of Deuteronomy. It's a real privilege. Thanks, guys. In verses 15 through 16, it talks about asylum seekers that get picked up by the army, and the army is instructed they were not to send them back. Verse 15 tells us, "You shall not give up to his master a slave who has escaped from his master to you. He shall dwell with you in your midst in the place that he shall choose within one of your towns, wherever it suits him. You shall not wrong him." And finally, verses 17 through 18 deal with ritual prostitutes. Furthermore, he says, "Don't ever give out of your tithes money from prostitution. It's not money that God's interested in. It's people." And if nothing else, the lifestyle of a prostitute breaks his heart. But in verses 19 through 23, Moses discusses vows. Vows were something that soldiers were quick to make. "God, if you get me through this, I'll do such and such." I can remember the first time I ever prayed. I'd been puking my guts out all night on a fishing boat off the coast of the Atlantic Sea. I prayed, "God, if you keep me from vomiting one more time, I'll do anything you ask." He didn't. I didn't either. But I did laugh about it when I came to faith later. The fact is, I wouldn't have done anything God asked for keeping me from throwing up. Vows like that usually aren't meant, and they're therefore usually not kept. Therefore, Moses says, hey, they're not even necessary. You don't need to make them. He says, if you abstain from vowing, it isn't a sin. God doesn't need you to make vows, especially vows that you have no intention of keeping. In fact, it's considered a sin if you make them, but it's not a sin if you don't. That's why Moses says, if you abstain from vowing, it isn't a sin. Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount said, just let your yes be yes and your no be no. In other words, mean what you say and say what you mean. The final verses of this chapter tell us, if you go into your neighbor's vineyard, you may eat your fill of grapes, as many as you wish, but you shall not put any in a bag. If you go into your neighbor's standing grain, you may pluck the ears with your hand, but shall not put the sickle to your neighbor's standing grain. This final section has to do with traveling through the land and eating off people's trees and out of their vineyards. The rule is, you can pluck it with your hands, but you can't put it into a Tupperware container and take it with you. They didn't have any AM PM mini markets back then. There were no roadside hot dogs serving up salmonella. Nope, cheesy nachos were just a pipe dream back then. You scored when you found a fruit tree, and you can imagine an army moving through a territory. But even then, God has them respect nature. He says, take what you can eat. If you come across a vineyard or a whole orchard, take what you can take with your hand and put to your mouth. But nothing goes in a bag because you're there for the moment and you can't wipe out that entire crop. So picture an army moving through the territory of Israel to go to war. Deuteronomy chapter 23 pretty much covers all of the important bases. They would settle in houses and settle down as a people eventually and not be marauding travelers anymore. But with all the war coming onto their plate, Israel was going to need these rules. They would become an ongoing part of the life of the assembled army of the Lord, or the assembly that we heard about in the beginning of the chapter. Whenever these men were called upon to protect and serve, there would be a certain amount of rules of order. You know, it's amazing as we come to the end of Deuteronomy chapter 23 today. As we've looked over the last few chapters, we can see how far ahead the book of Deuteronomy is over and above the people's surrounding. In other words, because there is a basis of a belief in God underlying all of these practices, the Israelites were light years ahead of the people around them as far as decency and protecting the rights of others. Although people sometimes want to take an odd verse or two and pull it out of context and maybe use it as a way to either support bigotry or say something that the Bible is not actually saying, you have to hand it to the book of Deuteronomy. It wouldn't be for thousands of years that many of these concepts would come into play, and people would start to think about fairness and justice, protecting the rights of the innocent. There's even something about immigration and conservation. You know, many parts of the world today still don't value many of the things that you read about in the book of Deuteronomy. Many of these concepts didn't even get attention until about 150 to 200 years ago. People just had bigger fish to fry. Read Deuteronomy chapter 23 today, and as you do, bless God that you're a part of the assembly of the Lord.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.